Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Everyone's having a good week so far. It's 8 a.m. here on the East Coast in New York on Friday, so we are officially almost through the week. Hope everyone's got some good plans going on for the weekend, and very excited about today's show, as we'll be bringing back our guest from a little bit of an extended series that we did with her, Dr. Sarah Molino, who is a professor of history over at Guilford College, and is now based out of the Greensboro, North Carolina area. We're just waiting for her to get on the line now so that we can find out what she's been up to since we last spoke with her. I know a big part of what Sarah, as we call her on the show here, had done was women's studies, and had really taken us through a lot of amazing and incredible and controversial events, I would say, throughout the course of history, as she had taught for basically over 34 years, and had seen a lot of different things. I mean, you know, from the civil rights movement that she had witnessed firsthand, obviously, a lot of the great movements that we've had with equality on many levels, and obviously today, this still has its place because there is still plenty of tension out there as to the treatment of people of color, people from minorities, and it's unfortunate, but it is something that we do have to face and we do have to work on a daily basis. So let's see if we can get Sarah on the line.
Hello?
They may have her on. Sarah, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, perfect. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to CMC Radio.
Thank you.
How have you been? How's everything going, all right?
Everything's going fine. Busy summer.
Great, good. So tell us real quick, Sarah, now we had you on the show a couple months ago and did a bit of an extended series, a couple of shows with you. What have you been doing since we last spoke with you?
I've been traveling quite a bit to see my family, and I've been working with a new project, which is a continuation of an old project. I've been working this spring and into this summer, kind of intensively into the summer, on an organization called the Guilford Anti-Racism Alliance, which is a community-based group composed of all different sectors of the community. And there is a white caucus and a people of color caucus, and they meet together and once a month. And it's been very interesting. I did some anti-racism training, which is part of my, part of my general interest in women's studies. At Guilford, there was an anti-racism task force, and I worked on that, and I worked on the historical part of it, constructing a timeline of racist behavior and responses to that racist behavior at Guilford College, and then now I'm working on it in relationship to Greensboro, and we hope to eventually broaden it to Guilford County, but right now we're focusing on Greensboro. So so that's been an interesting and new group for me, and I've enjoyed it very much. I mean, it's very much of a piece with things that I did while I was teaching, and now this is expanding it into the broader community.
Now, is in the Greensboro area, has racism recently been more or less of an issue you know, as opposed to some of the other areas, you know, in the country right now, which we've seen some pretty crazy stuff.
Right, we've seen a lot of wild stuff all over actually. Greensboro is increasingly a diverse community, and there have been the Black Lives Matter movement has certainly made a difference here and has been vocal, especially in relationship to police activities and in relationship to looking at the disparities in education. Those are some of the two areas that we're focusing on. But one of the things that this group does is they organized a series, and I went to one of them last spring, called Doing Our Work, which are public lectures and programs and discussions held in different. This year we're going to do them in different churches. Last year they were all done in one church, and I'm hoping to bring the synagogue into it as well, to open up to the community an opportunity to understand our own racism, you know, that is institutionalized in American society, and then also to think about how to actively become anti-racist, how to work with that knowledge that the anti-racism training gives you, and then make a difference in your community. So it has an activist agenda, and one of the activist agendas is planning this series, but then there's also a lot of research that goes into making the information available to others. So, and to the group itself, the group is educating itself and then hopes to involve other people in learning about their own biases that everybody brings to the table and how to work with that. So that's been an interesting new addition to a busy schedule.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just getting back to the tension that might be in the air. I mean, do you notice that with each event that occurs, you know, across the country, that things in Greensboro in particular, you know, seem a little more on edge, or is it kind of, you know, everyone's still on the same level playing field? It's just that they're aware of what's going on.
Well, I think. A few things are happening, and this is the historian in me talking. There's underlying racism in our culture in general, and it has been exacerbated by 8 years of having a Black president, which some have resented, and that has evoked, you know, some of their feelings, and I think, you know, the election has exacerbated this debate because it's right out there in front of your face.
Oh yeah.
So it's on everybody's mind, and I think, you know, we had, for example, one of the people who spoke at the Democratic National Convention was a man named Reverend William Barber, and he's from North Carolina. He's the state head of the NAACP, and I don't know if he lives in Greensboro. He lives nearby, and he speaks often. I've heard him a couple of times, and for example, at Guilford graduation, the college where I taught, Reverend Barber spoke because the students on campus were very much involved in the Black Lives Matter discussion and debate and so on, and so they asked him, and he was he was fabulous, and he had done his homework about Guilford. He knew about the Quakers and what the Quakers had done, and he was really interesting to hear. And he's a very, very powerful speaker. I mean, he's a strong, powerful black minister. And anyway, so he was great, and so that's an example of how. One example of how the and he has organized the Moral Mondays movement in North Carolina, which is a group that, you know, when the Republican legislature was passing all kinds of things that many people objected to, all kinds of flaws. For example, the HB2, which has been debated widely across the country, I learned. This is the Charlotte. This is the law that was passed in response to the Charlotte's non-discrimination law about LGBT people and using the bathrooms. That ridiculous law. Anyway, yeah. So, you know, but the Moral Monday started before that. Moral Monday started in 2013, but it was with the Republican administration that still exists in Raleigh. And so people just demonstrated on the steps of the Capitol, and there were people arrested, and they wanted to speak to the governor, and they wanted to hear, you know, answers to their questions about what was happening in the funding for education and the funding for Social Security and the refusal of North Carolina to accept federal money for the healthcare system, and so on. So there's been ongoing protest across the state, and the Moral Mondays were organized in Asheville and Wilmington and Raleigh and Greensboro and other places throughout the state, and so it's been very interesting to watch this process, and now I began to participate in it also.
Now, does this? And I know this is kind of a trick question for you, but with everything going on, does it keep you on your toes? And does it? Not that it excites you, because obviously nobody wants to have tension. And certainly not killing and rioting and all this other stuff that's going on. I mean, no one wants this at all. But is there any solution that you foresee? I mean, does it really matter who's going to be the president, you know, in the next couple of years? Can they do anything? I mean, do you think, that's what I mean. We're kind of, I don't mean to sound like a total pessimist, but I feel like we're kind of screwed right now with this situation that we're in, because we don't really have the best answer either way. I'm not really confident with either candidate that we have, and really? I think I feel like a lot of people out there that kind of say, you know, we're in a very tough spot, and we have to watch out for a lot of different things that go on. But I mean, really, what's the answer here?
Well, there's no one answer, obviously, but I think that it's really important to educate ourselves as much as we can, and you know, about how to understand how we've come to this place where we have these two presidential candidates who are very polarizing in their own ways. I think the Republican Party is in a mess right now, a real mess. I think the Democrats have their act together a little bit better, but there are still a lot of people who don't like Hillary. And I think some of that is, you know, there are some of the attitude towards Hillary has to do with a kind of sexism in the society that there's some people who can't quite wrap their brains around the idea of a woman being at the helm you know, being a leader. So some of it is about sexism, And they depict her, and I've been following this and cutting out political cartoons because I'm just really interested. I'm always really interested in any election year. It just, you know, grabs me. And I was recently with my 95-year-old mother, and I realized that she's always been a political junkie. And it was during the time when Trump made the remarks about Hillary was going to do away with the Second Amendment. And so my mother who has dementia was asking me about what's the Second Amendment. And so I thought, oh, I better print out a copy of the Constitution for reference for her. And anyway, so it was an ongoing conversation, and you know, we watched this the clip of Trump being replayed and replayed on CNN.
Right.
But you know, it provoked it. You know, it gave us something to talk about, and it also was a. But you know, I think in my mind, there's no question about which candidate is better prepared to be president.
Right.
And I realized that, you know, the full truth is I was in school with Hillary. So, so I actually personally knew her when she was 19 years old.
No kidding.
And yeah, and I've had a very funny experience with this because, there was a picture that was shown in the video that was shown before Hillary spoke at the last night of the convention, which is a picture taken by a classmate of mine who's a photographer. She was the photo editor for the college newspaper, and it's a picture of Hillary speaking. And in fact, my roommate and I are both in this picture, you know, which my roommate, my college roommate discovered. I didn't realize it, but when I looked at that picture, but she saw it. And if you enlarge the picture, you can find us. But, somebody from the Washington Post called me up, and you know, so it's sort of, I'm digging in these memories of almost 50 years ago, to think about what she was like as a college student. And, you know, so that has been a very interesting experience for me. And I've followed her career with a great deal of interest. And she did spend a lot of time, she was sort of probing. She was always very serious and always very curious. And she asked wonderful questions. So we must have talked to her endlessly during that 1 year that we all lived in the same residence hall. And what we think is that she was just trying to figure out who she was, because she was this Goldwater girl, and then she became a Democrat. And so anyway, that transformation has been the subject of the interest of a Washington Post reporter. And, and yesterday I got an email from my friend whose name is on the picture, who said there's somebody from The Guardian who wants to talk to people. So I just, you know, I just think the whole thing is kind of funny. But I, you know, I do know she does do her homework. She does. She's a very private person. So she doesn't come across as a charismatic figure the way Bill does. I mean, Bill is, you know, Bill is a natural born politician. She's not, you know, and she's a little awkward sometimes, but she really works hard to understand the issues. And she said that in her speech. She said, you know, I'm a behind the scenes person. And now I'm being put in a different position, and I will work as hard as I can collaboratively, which is the way I think change takes place, to do what I can. So, you know, I realize she is a polarizing figure because she's been in the public life such a long time. She's made mistakes, and some of them are serious. And, you know, but I also think I also think there's no comparison in the preparation that she has for being president and the preparation that Donald Trump has for being president.
I don't think anybody can really argue with you on that one, though.
Really?
I don't think there's an argument for that. That's the one thing that I know that she really has against Trump,
right,
is that, you know, Trump doesn't really have any position to really go off of. He's just kind of crazy and says a lot of crazy things. And
right,
very,
and
you know,
and he also,
concern.
I mean, I really wonder how well he understands how the process of government works. You know,
right,
that you can't make all these, you know, he said at one point, you know, if there's a problem with veterans health care, I want you to cobble a special line into the Oval Office and I will personally take care of the problem. You call me and I'll take care of the problem. And I thought, you know, this does not reveal a real understanding of how the executive branch works. Or
right,
how you have to work in collaboration with Congress or the Supreme Court or anything like that. So I don't, that scares me that he,
of course, and I think
you know,
should,
that he would have so much
very,
power and
right,
with not as much understanding as I would like him to have of how, I thought that when the guy said, I'll lend you a copy of my Constitution, I thought, I wonder if you've read this, Donald Trump. So, you know, I mean, my views are clear here, but I,
of course,
I do think that, I do think it's, you know, I wish we had, I mean, I think no woman who's the first woman is going to be, is that it, the path
received
is
as well, you think,
for her. Huh?
Yeah. No,
yeah.
I said, no matter who it was, you don't know if they're going to be received that well as far as
no matter who the woman. No, I think,
yeah,
right, exactly. Because, you know, when a man speaks forcefully, people think he's, you know, taking a strong stand. When a woman speaks forcefully, she's labeled aggressive. So there is still,
right,
there is still, you know, that an underlying sexism along with racism in our culture, and I think part of that is what's happening with Hillary, and you know,
can
and
I
think
you a
also it's a
question?
Reaction to Obama.
Sure. Let me ask you this question then, and I'm
yeah,
very curious to know your perspective on it. If the two candidates were simply Obama versus Hillary, what do you think the general reaction would be at that point?
Well, there are a lot of people who feel that Obama has done a terrible job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, I think Obama has been significantly handicapped by having a Republican Congress who has tried to undermine him from the start.
Absolutely.
So, and they, you know, in 2008, when they were both running, you know, we did have that contrast in the Democratic Party, and
yep,
people chose. I mean, it was really interesting that people made the choice to go with Obama, who was a new face, who was a
right,
you know, good campaigner, who really evoked an enormous amount of enthusiasm on the part of young people,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to Hillary, who was a familiar
right,
face. And, you know, someone I know in town who also went to Wellesley said to me, what do you think? Do you think she'll run in 2016? And I said, well, I wouldn't be that surprised. So,
right,
you know,
yeah,
after. But she was gracious. She made a good speech
mm-hmm,
when she realized that, you know, she had to concede to Obama. She made
sure,
a, you know, she was very conciliatory about that. And she really handled herself beautifully, and she said,
right,
you know, by doing what I've done, I've at least shown little girls that they can have certain expectations for themselves to run for president. And
right,
so, you know, that's what she said in 2008, and so this is the moment. And I, you know,
mm-hmm,
I listened to, there's an interesting thing that the campaign is doing, which is they're doing these weekly podcasts with her.
Okay.
And they're, you know, to try to humanize her a little bit. And I listened to one interview. They did one last week, and I just listened to it. I was curious about what it would be. And they said to her, how do you relax before you have these long days and you are, you know, working so hard to meet as many people and, you know, and see as many different kinds of work situations and to talk to the people wherever you go. How do you manage? How do you go to sleep at night after so much stimulation during the day? And she said, well, I find myself looking at the videos of my children and my grandchildren and giggling over the funny little things that they do, and that
sure.
brings me back to reality. And that's how I relax at the end of the day. And she said, I just try to be present wherever I am and listen. And listening is such an important skill that many people have lost in our culture because we're so connected to our machines, so to all our technology. So, you know, I think that is worth something. You know, I'm certainly not trying to tell your listeners who they should vote for. That's a decision they have to make for themselves. I'm telling you what I think about the situation. But you know, it's a stark contrast this time, and it hasn't always been such a stark contrast. I mean, McCain was a respectable candidate and respectful candidate. You know, and he had experience that was, and other Republican candidates have as well, Mitt Romney and others. But Donald Trump is just from another planet, as far as I can figure out.
Yeah.
From his own planet.
And I think that I think everyone will see that, I think, on Election Day, too, that there's the majority of people I can't imagine are going to be comfortable with the idea of him being running the country, or at least, you know, pretending to run the country.
Well, I had lunch with a friend of mine with whom I disagree on a lot of things politically.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, he's an embarrassment to me. And I, even though, you know, she generally votes Republican, she said, I don't want to do this. But she said, on the other hand, Hillary lies. And I thought, oh, God. And I thought, you know, anyone who's been in public life, and Madeleine Albright talked about this too, that they have to make decisions very quickly, and they're faced with these crisis situations, and sometimes they make the right decision, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they change their minds about certain issues, and then people call them on it. So, you know, you're under such scrutiny, you're under a microscope all the time with everything you say and everything that you do, that it's really hard to come across as being fully consistent. I mean, none of us are fully consistent in our lives. And I thought, and I realized after that lunch that I should have said to my friend, every politician lies. Are you kidding? So I don't know whether Hillary has lied about this stuff, but they, so far, though, they worked really hard. The Republicans have worked really hard to get her on Benghazi and to get her on the server in her home in Chappaqua. They haven't been able to come up with it. I mean, they're trying. They haven't been able to come up with concrete evidence to actually criminally indict her. And yet they're really trying. So it'll be very interesting to see how the conversation develops, and it'll be interesting to watch them debate each other. I mean, I just think it's a fascinating time, and it is
absolutely,
you know, it's a time when a lot of change is taking place, and you know, people are uncomfortable with so much change. So,
of course,
it's made everybody tense, I think. I am certainly worried about it. I don't know
as
if you
as
are
am
too.
I. And again, mm-hmm. you know, I Unfortunately, Sarah, we have flown through this half an hour program.
Have we already? Okay, yes, we have. I see about it.
But of course, you know, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on. Great discussions about things that really matter, which is amazing for our listeners and amazing for the show. We hope to have you back on soon so that we can kind of follow up and see, you know, where this whole process is taking us, because it's an exciting and scary time, like we mentioned.
Is there anything
you'd like to plug, or is there any, you know, the organization or anything that, you'd like to plug, or anything that people can find out some more information?
Well, I would just encourage people to, to just sort of pursue the anti-racism activity, you know, this conversation that we began with. I would just like to encourage people to check out what's happening in their communities. There are always lots of letters to the local newspaper, if they still read the local newspaper, with a lot of controversy around these issues about the police and community relations, about the educational system. Those are two main areas, and the healthcare system and so on, that they should look and think about them as whether or not they reflect issues about, this is not a very good question, but reflect issues about the underlying tensions between groups of people and racism and sexism, to look for those underlying systemic issues. Okay?
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right.
Everyone,
thank you.
Please, hopefully we can have Dr. Sarah Molino back on the show soon. And again, thank you all for listening. And Sarah, thank you for coming on this morning.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Well, take care of yourself, and hopefully we'll talk to you
thanks.
Soon.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks.
From everyone
Bye-bye.
Here at CMC
Bye-bye.
Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.